All right, so my name is Jordy Izzard again, and I'm an alumni relations officer at SAIS in the DC campus. And I'm here today with Eric Rasmussen, who's from the class of 1969 from Washington, DC campus. And today's date is October 15th, 2010. And thanks so much for joining us today. And we really appreciate your time. Yeah, thanks. So we're just going to have a little bit of a conversation. Again, kind of go back to your memories of SAIS and talk about your career and then kind of go into today's students and talk about any advice you might have for them. But let's start with just kind of originally, what brought you to SAIS?
Well, when I was in undergraduate school in Iowa, I was already interested in international affairs, international issues. I was a history major, mm-hmm. which gave me some introduction to other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And I applied, as I recall, I applied to London School of Economics, Fletcher School, and SAIS. I didn't get into LSE, which may be just as well, because economics is actually not my strong suit. Mm-hmm. I did get into Fletcher and SAIS, and I just, you know, I hemmed and hawed a bit, but I figured, well, if I'm going to study international affairs, what better place to do it than Washington?
Mm-hmm.
So
I bet you got your fair share of economics at SAIS, though, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Useful to have, but yeah, it was, at least in those days, it probably is still a required mm-hmm. area of focus.
Mm-hmm. There are a number of courses that are required in the economics background, yeah. So
I was very happy that I picked SAIS, because it's certainly the faculty and the resources that SAIS could take advantage of in this area mm-hmm. are unparalleled.
Mm-hmm. I mean, having the Brookings Institute across the street and like 10 different embassies in the area. Yeah, it is. There's quite a bit going on. Yeah, and the World Bank, IFC, and all of that is right down the road. So,
in those days, the Embassy of Canada was right next door.
Yeah, another gentleman mentioned that. Yeah, that's great.
Building.
Good. And so, what were your initial? Did you go to SAIS right out of undergraduate?
I did.
Okay. Yeah,
in large part because of Vietnam. I was trying to stay one step ahead of my draft board, mm-hmm. and so having a student deferment was important in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get a continued deferment until I finished here.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that, so in that sense, I really, that's what I wanted to do, to go straight into graduate school. But also it was useful because there were a number of students in my class who had some work experience,
uh-huh.
both men and women. So it was
and
useful,
what were they doing?
Useful to get
what had your
the mix.
Yeah, no. What had your colleagues been doing in your student colleagues?
Well, I know there were some had worked at AID.
Uh-huh.
I recall just had some. Volunteer experience. I think there were some that had already served in the military. Mm-hmm. military. I'm sure there were some that had already been in business, mm-hmm. in the business world.
That's great.
So it was a good mix.
Yeah.
Of areas of specialty or experience that wasn't just straight, nonstop students like I was.
Uh-huh. And do you have fond memories of being at SAIS?
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tough. It was, you know, academically, it was mm-hmm. you know, a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, I'd already had that experience in undergraduate school, so I wasn't expecting an easy ride.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it, you know, very much. I mean, there were, you know, there were stressful episodes, as you might imagine, any mm-hmm. you know, with any sort of academic experience or other experiences as well. But.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I just I felt very enriched overall
mm-hmm.
by the experience.
Great. And what was your area of focus when you ended up graduating?
Well, in those days you had to have three areas of focus, one of which had to be international economics.
Right.
And the other ones I took were, you had to have a regional area. Mm-hmm. I had Europe, European affairs, and then my third area was American foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And what are your fondest memories of SAIS, or what do you remember about being here, other than it was really hard work?
Right. Oh, it's a mix, really. Certainly the student interaction, the varied backgrounds of the students here. A good friend I had at the time was from Ghana. So that was, for a guy from the Midwest, that was an unusual experience to have.
Are you still friends with him?
No, I'm not. Yeah. He went
back,
back, and I just, have been in touch with him in a long, long time. I think it was a little bit
in the beginning.
After.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to always joke of being the prince in Ghana.
So. That's great.
He had a good sense of humor.
Good.
Certainly the access to the, the professors and guest lecturers that SAIS had was a real plus. The informal times as well. I mean, there was a lounge down in the basement.
Still there.
Is it? Okay. I mean, it was where the locker room is now.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So oftentimes we would, a bunch of us would go down there in the evening to listen to Walter Cronkite on the news, or Eric Everide and those newscasters at the time, and particularly reporting on Vietnam.
Have you been down there recently to the basement?
I have. I'm just on the way to the men's room, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, you should walk down there. I mean, they've got a pool table and foosball and a couch with a TV. It's kind of, and a vending machine, so it is kind of just a place for people to hang out.
Yeah.
Some go down there to study, and so that's fun.
Yeah, I think it was less well equipped in those days. But there were, just overall, I really felt I was getting a useful education.
That's great. That's great. And tell me, as a good segue, tell me a little bit about what you did when you graduated and how that's evolved for you in a career.
Well, actually, I wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
Just to relate, I mean, some of the professors I had, there are some I actually, I can't recall their names, but certainly Isaiah Frank in economics was a...
Frank Fukuyama?
No, his name was Isaiah
Frank. Oh, right, because Frank was new. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Was a monumental, professor of economics. And so that was excellent. And being in European affairs, I took a number of courses and had as my advisor was David Kaleo, who may still be teaching here. I'm not. If he has retired, it probably is just recently.
Yeah, I think he may be still here. Yeah.
And then there were some, I think those two were full-time professors here, but there were some guest lecturers like Sam Brown, who was focused on foreign policy issues, and an author named, and I'm not sure how much of an academician he has, but Edmund Stillman. He taught a course on, sort of contemporary European issues. Just, a wide range of experts that really interested me, and I mean, got me interested in some areas that I hadn't been exposed to before.
That's great.
I think the dean at the time, or maybe just for my first year, was Francis Wilcox. And I can't remember if Robert Osgood, I think he was on the faculty, but I can't remember if he became the dean my second year or if that was after I'd left. But
around that time,
was certainly also very highly regarded.
Yeah.
Both as a professor and
absolutely.
And his dean.
Yeah. Good. And when you say Europe, did you focus on any one or a few countries that were of particular interest?
Not that I recall. I don't think there were any offerings that were specific to one country, at least that I recall. But some of the research I did or the papers I wrote were specific. I remember I had a good time, if I could put it that way, writing a paper for Edmund Stillman on the Yugoslav resistance movement in the Second World War. It's an issue that sort of happened to pop up for one reason or another, and it was something that I found extremely interesting. And so again, that sort of broadening experience that that you get here.
Yeah, that's great. And what about a language? Did you
French?
You took French. Okay, that's great. Do you still use it?
I do, at least a little bit. I can recall, and I try to keep up a bit. My wife and I have traveled to France a few times in recent years. But it's in the meantime, it had gotten almost non-existent in terms of my skills. But it was in there someplace, so it did.
Comes back.
A certain amount of it will come back.
Yeah, that's great.
I certainly can remember being up in the language lab with headphones on, listening to tapes.
The dreaded orals.
And the orals, yes.
Yes, I've heard about that many times from everybody who talks about that. It was a scary moment.
It was, but they were, those instructors were excellent also.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Very understanding about learning issues, learning capabilities or disabilities, whatever.
Yeah.
But I stumbled through the orals, I guess, sufficiently well that.
That's great.
I passed. I don't know if that's still a requirement.
Yeah, it is for a certain area. Yeah, if you do. Yeah, exactly. It is. Yeah. Well, good. And tell me a little bit about your career and how your degree segued into the area that you were in and maybe you're still in.
Sure. Well, after I graduated, I lost my deferment. So I was actually taking steps to enlist in the Army and Intelligence as a option or as a alternative to just being drafted in the infantry.
Sure.
And much to my surprise, and I ended up with a deferment, a physical deferment. So I ended up not having to serve. So there I was, and I was living in, I'd just gotten married after I graduated, and was living in Baltimore while my wife was at the Homewood campus.
Oh, okay.
Getting a Master of Arts in teaching.
Did you meet through being at Johns Hopkins?
No, I met at college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we got engaged the spring of my first year here. So all of a sudden I was in the job market.
Yeah.
But I knew, I'd gotten interested in, actually had taken one of the service exam. The first time I took it, I didn't pass the written. So I was.
It's a tough exam.
Yeah. It is. It is. I remember we had to go to some high school here in the district and to take the exam on a Saturday. And so I figured, I'm still interested. I just, want to get involved in American government and international affairs if I can. So I kind of wanted to stay here in Washington, at least in this area. So most of the time, I think I spent making the rounds up on the Hill. Trying to get a job working for a member of Congress.
Sure.
And I was part luck, part, I think, my background here at ICE, but it also, the luck part, I think, was the fact that each member of Congress at that point had gotten some, their what they call the clerk hire allowance had uh-huh. been increased, so every member of Congress, House member, could hire one more staff person than they'd had been able to hire before.
Uh-huh.
So, as luck would have it, and by networking, everybody I even remotely knew or had met had come to size from Congress, I ended up with a position with Lee Hamilton from Indiana.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and he at that point was still a relatively new member. He'd come in with the Johnson landslide in 64.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't have a, he was on Foreign Affairs, House Foreign Affairs mm-hmm. full committee, but didn't have his own subcommittee yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some, handled Foreign Affairs issues for him, as well as a number of other issues mm-hmm. out of his personal office. So that that worked out very well.
That's great.
And I enjoyed it up there. I worked for him for about 7 years.
Uh-huh. That's great.
And again, doing some international affairs, some other work
mm-hmm.
as well. And in fact, when he did rise up and sufficiently in the pecking order on the Foreign Affairs Committee, he did get his subcommittee on Europe and the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
So I've forgotten the specifics at this point, but I know I, when I was here at SAIS, I got to know Mike Van Dusen.
Uh-huh.
And indicated to Mike and to Lee that, you know, you two should get together.
Right.
Because there's an opening up here. And that, you know, that worked out for
Yeah, isn't
for
it amazing
well.
The connections you make too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing people from here, you can see openings and things that will work. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah. Mac, of course, was with Lee for
Yeah.
Until he retired from Congress, and he's now the head of the Woodrow Wilson Institute.
Uh-huh.
And I think Mike is, last I knew, he was still with him over there, so.
Yeah, yeah.
So that I was with Lee, as I said, for 7 years or so, and then I'd gotten interested in energy issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that was...
Which brings you to where you are. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
I mean,
great.
At that point, the Arab oil embargo had occurred. And
uh-huh.
So energy was just much more of a hot topic and one that interested me.
Sure.
So I... came downtown, down to the Energy Department, but in the Congressional Affairs Office.
Okay.
So I was doing liaison work between the departments, a number of offices in the department and the Congress, but including the Office of International Affairs
mm-hmm.
at the department. So that was, and it wasn't full-time international affairs work, but it was, it kept me in touch.
Sure. Yeah.
Which I would have wanted to do
yeah.
with those sorts of issues.
Great.
And then about 6 years or so ago, I moved into the Energy Information Administration,
mm-hmm.
which is also does some international data and data analysis. I'm not a statistician, so I'm doing outreach, doing liaison work and other duties as assigned in out of the Office of the Administrator.
Mm-hmm.
BIA.
Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, very much.
That's
it's
great.
EIA is sort of EIA is a little bit of an odd duck at the department because it's policy neutral. We don't advocate any particular
right.
policies. We supply the data and the analysis, the forecasts about energy markets, both
mm-hmm. state the facts
and domestic and international.
Yeah.
So. People around the country and internationally, including Congress, can use our products as they
mm-hmm.
see fit or misuse them if they choose.
Turn things around a little bit,
right.
Yeah. Do you see that happen a lot?
Oh, on occasion.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, either they misread or misconstrue the data, or they use it to support their own viewpoints on
mm-hmm.
issues, which is their... right to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's been continued involvement in international, now international energy issues.
Mm-hmm.
Up till now.
That's great. Do you see yourself continuing in this realm, or do you have other interests down the road, or?
Well, I think, I mean, I've worked for the government, mm-hmm. either on the Hill or in the executive branch for more than 40 years now, so I'm approaching a point of
sure
retirement.
Sure, that's great.
Don't
travel, you have some interest in traveling?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And I'd like to get, you know, have the time to do some, you know, take some classes again and one thing or another and do, I haven't gotten an agenda yet,
mm-hmm.
all figured out, but.
That's super, that's great. It's exciting times.
Yeah, it is. But it's important, I think, to stay mentally challenged.
Absolutely,
in retirement, so I'm taking some courses and maybe spending some more time on my French. But
there's so much to do out
on
there.
The list.
Yeah, that's great. And tell me, what if you were like looking at students today at SAIS, what advice do you have for them?
Well, I think it's, I mean, it's not any great light bulb sort of observation, mm-hmm. but it's very, very important to be able to express yourself both mm-hmm. in written form and orally.
Mm-hmm.
So having good writing skills, good
sure.
interpersonal skills are really, I think, at the top of the list
uh-huh.
for being an advantage and being as you're a competitor or a contender for a position
mm-hmm.
out there, and also just to network as much as you can to even folks you may have met once and or been exposed to whatever, and of course all the alumni from mm-hmm. SAIS that are in your area of interest. Because I'm not an extrovert, but mm-hmm. I found it extremely important to go out and to try to interact with people, to knock on some doors that people I had met already who had come to SAIS for
sure.
some event or lecture, or I had met through someone I had spoken with already, sort of the domino effect in a good sense of, you know, well, I don't have anything at the moment, but you might speak to X, you know, he or she might have something, and so
mm-hmm.
you sort of get like layers of an onion getting stripped away
mm-hmm.
To pursue, you know, potential openings.
Mm-hmm. And it is in some ways both what your skills are verbally and in writing, but also who you know and who you meet in those networking opportunities become really important later on too.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's, yeah, the more competitive a position is, the more
mm-hmm.
advantage you have if you're not just
somebody random,
cold call sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's enormously helpful, and SAIS has such a good network around Washington and around the world.
It does, yeah, and with the internet now, it, you know, in the last
right.
10 years, it's really changed how those connections can happen.
When I was here and looking for a job afterwards, I mean, it was all, you know, there was no internet.
Just writing and calling.
Computers.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
very different.
The old-fashioned way, sort of.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're glad to actually have you here at SAIS today. And I welcome any other thoughts that you might have or memories or advice you have for students.
Well, there were a couple. I mean, since
absolutely.
It's very helpful to have questions ahead of time.
Please,
give my memory a jog. But I knew one of the most vivid memories I have when I was here was during the riots of 68.
Yeah.
Of 68 after Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I think it was during spring vacation of SAIS, but I was.
Of course, yeah.
And immediately afterwards, but I was still here at that vacation doing, you know, some work, some research, whatever. And if we went up to the library, you could look out the windows and look that way and see the smoke rising from all the destruction and fires along 14th Street. And some of us actually walked over there and watched the riots in place. I mean, bricks being thrown through windows and everything. It was, we just had to sort of...
There was a big reaction.
Keep a little bit of distance to protect yourself, but it was,
historically,
very
historical
and a fortunate situation. Here you've been.
Absolutely. Wow. Interesting place to be at that time.
It was.
Right down the road.
Yeah. And I roomed with... My first year, I roomed with a fellow actually I knew from college, John Shiro.
From Iowa?
Or no, he was from Pittsburgh.
Okay. Remind me where you went as an undergrad?
Grinnell College.
Okay.
In Iowa.
Okay. But you knew him from that school, mm-hmm. though. That's what I mean. Yeah. That's interesting. So you guys were both out there?
Yeah,
and then...
I think that's... Gosh, it gets hazy.
Oh, it's okay.
But I think that's how I knew him, who knew John.
Yeah, no, it's just
so
interesting.
So we roomed up by 18th and Columbia Road, that neighborhood. And then he, after his first year, he did get drafted. So he had to go do his Vietnam stint. And then he came back to Sice, fortunately. And
good.
He wasn't injured or killed over there. But I do remember a professor, I think it was Professor Johnston, my second year, he announced all of a sudden, one day in a very evocative way, that one of the best students he'd had the previous year, who had graduated, had gone into the army and been killed in Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
So that...
Tragically, I'm sure that happened in many other
so
cases
really,
as well.
It sort of, a lot of time has passed since then, but those sort of impacts
are obviously significant.
Are very significant and very strong. Let's see. I think that's about.
No, that's fine.
In terms of
no problem. I really thank you for your time today. Again, it's really interesting to be able to talk with you and hear kind of what was going on at the time and what Sice was like then and you know, the differences between, what was happening 30, 40 years ago and what's happening now. So,
this, of course, in those days, this was the only building, the only part of the campus. Before the Rome building and other...
Bob and all of this. Yeah.
So and my class was probably maybe 100 and a quarter people or so. At least that's my recollection. So it was already getting a little bit...
Significantly small, yeah. But it was getting bigger.
Yeah. But it was, if it could be handled at all in this building. I don't know how big the classes are.
I think they have 600 in at a time at Sice.
But each incoming class is...
Something like 300 or 400, I believe.
Really?
I believe, yeah.
I didn't realize it got
But
hard.
I think that might include Bologna, too. So I'll have to get that answer. But in any event, thank you so much for your time today. And we'll look forward to talking with you again soon.
Sure, I'd be glad to.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah,
that was fairly painless.